Welcome to the HR Business Blueprint Podcast. I'm Nikki Masterman, founder and managing director of Inspired HR. In this series, alongside my fabulous guests, we will be chatting about becoming a consultant and the benefits of a licensed model. In this episode, I'm joined by John Devitt, the founder and CEO of Recovery for Life. Recovery for Life is a highly disruptive occupational health provider that specialises in mental health, addiction, neurodiversity and trauma, to name just a few. John, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Nikki. Lovely to be here.
Thank you for joining me. So could you introduce yourself and tell the listeners, in your own words, about your career and Recovery for Life?
Well, a bit of a varied career for me. So I've worked in international development, I've worked in enterprise and in running treatment systems for the NHS for addiction, mental health, etc. Where for dual diagnosis across Sunderland, we did a specialist GP practice in Stockton, down in Hackney, and in the Five Boroughs project for rehab. But I think the most fulfilling part of my career is what we're doing now. So we've been going for 8 years. We're on the specialist end of things, and we do traditional services, but we do them with our own sort of feel and very different approach for things like drug and alcohol testing. But again, with a slightly recovery focus that, you know, we don't make ethical judgments around drug use, for example. It's more about if somebody is, you know, come unstuck or is using drugs socially, it's about helping them realise that it's not appropriate for the workplace, the safety risks, etc. But also the biggest driver for us is around health and well-being. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is drugs destroy your mental health. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the evidence shows this. But I think without judgment is really, I suppose, our sort of touchstone in all the areas that we work. And I think why people come to us is that traditional models for, be it occupational health or health surveillance or attendance management reports or drug and alcohol testing, etc., quite often they're not joined up. Mm-hmm. So we operate an integrated model where one part will trigger another part of the service. And where we're really unique is we have a direct treatment and intervention team. So it's the same clinical team that we had when we were running treatment services. And really what we've done is bring those skills into the workplace, which we were amazed when we first started being approached by businesses to help them, that it was a complete unmet need. So we work with a lot of big name clients like Hitachi, Quorn, ConocoPhillips, the oil company, Sunderland Football Club, Tyne Tunnel, etc., etc. Lots of big engineering companies and manufacturing companies across the UK. And we were even working with a few individuals internationally. So we work with some people in Nigeria and Australia. But I think the key thing that we're seeing across every sector and every client we're dealing with, whether it's a small client or a big client, whether it's professional services or manufacturing, for example, is that we're basically dealing with people issues. Mm-hmm. And these have really come to the fore since COVID. Mm. So we're very much seen as we're very innovative. We're very responsive. When we're providing treatment services, for example, it's not just generic counselling, which we don't really find works for these issues. So we really, our base is a psychotherapy base with a key working model, which means when we're working with somebody, they can contact us 24/7. If they're struggling, we like to hear from people nearly every day to give that support in the early stages. And it's very much tailored to the individual needs rather than just, we'll come for an appointment next week and we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. So the meter's rarely on, shall we say. In fact, it's never on compared to some of the cases that people have shared with us and their experiences with other providers.
And we've talked about that. I mean, you are our preferred partner, our supplier. We work very, very closely with you. And, you know, we do a lot of work with you for our clients, to the point where I recommend you nationally to HR consultants. I've got you on Daniel Barnett's supplier list because you are that good and you are very innovative. You know, we've talked about before how I've worked in this field over 30 years and occupational health companies can get a bad rep because they're not reactive, they regurgitate what an individual has said without any proper professional opinion built into it or advice. And I know within our sector we quite often can sometimes talk about that report wasn't what we needed. But what's so innovative about you, and we've talked about this many times and I tell everyone about it, is that you do the pre and the post meetings, which helps you understand. And obviously we have the referral form, which the employee gets to see, so they know what we're seeking, but there's always context. So we help you understand what context, you know, so what support are we trying to put in place for the employee? What is it we're trying to understand? Because we're not experts, neither are our clients. And then obviously we then have the post-meeting to confirm you've had the meeting and you're able to share any immediate recommendations for adjustments to support the individual. You know, we say to clients that we can get a meeting and a turnaround on report under normal 1 to 2 weeks, which is brilliant for us because it just helps us be really reactive for our clients. And that's why we recommend you, because you are innovative and you are that very much reactive person. Now, Recovery for Life is a multi-award winning specialist and has been described by judges just last year when you won an award for mental health as extremely impressive, with unique tailored support for some of the most vulnerable in the workplace, and that you have succeeded where traditional approaches have failed. So what is it about Recovery for Life that makes you stand out and receive feedback like that, as well as the awards?
Well, it's very complimentary, and it sort of is quite rewarding when you see the impact. I mean, the biggest driver for us is we see the impact on the individual. I think people come to us for trust. Trust is probably the overarching driver why people come to us, because we're not hitmen. There is an honest broker to try and find the best response and the best outcome for both the employee and the company. And the real value of, say, the report, the pre and post calls, is to understand what the belief is behind from the employer's perspective, and then be able to match it and test it against what the employee is saying. So much of what we're doing is being an honest broker, to be honest. But I think when people make those sort of comments, I think partly we're driven by frustration. And coming out of treatment services, what we really noticed, and then moving into the sort of commercial occupational health field, was that there was a real gap between what needed to be done and what was being done. And that's the space in many ways that we fill. And to do what we do, people have to trust us. So I think the point for us is that we like to think outside the box. So the way we describe it, we're only interested in what works. So if somebody sitting in front of us believes in the great sky cat, and if the great sky cat comes down and kisses somebody on the nose, we'll put a bowl of milk out for the sky cat, all right? It's about what's going to work for that individual and how that's actually going to move the situation forward. So any report that we do, for example, and this is the reports really are they're just the summary of what we're doing. Any report that we do has to have sort of three things. One, we have to understand really what the medical history and what the understanding is. That's where sometimes we need to bring in the comprehensive assessment approach to get a deeper understanding if it's not obvious or if we've got some concerns, or if we're worried that the person's not getting the proper support they need. And that then helps us shape that conversation about who you need to go to talk to if it's not working with us, and actually what you need to have a conversation with your GP or a consultant or whatever. So quite often we get involved in helping develop sort of professional referrals and getting people in to see the right treatment or on the right medication. The second thing we are looking at is actually what the needs of the business are and how those, in many ways, the condition or the illness or whatever it might be that the individual has isn't really that relevant. What matters is how it affects them and their ability to carry out their roles and, you know, keep going. So for us, work is the most important part of recovery. Mm-hmm. It's the one of the things that drives us all. And I mean, the bottom line is if you're not happy in your work, don't do it. You need to find something that you are, because it has so many knock-on effects. So I think the understanding what the needs of the business are and how somebody's illness or condition will impact on their ability to carry a role is sometimes overlooked. There's a gap between that matching. Mm-hmm. And I think the third thing is actually about what people want. And quite often many people that we talk to, and it comes back to this point about if you're not happy doing something, really you need some support sometimes to find out what you do want. And sometimes losing your job or moving on from somewhere is quite often the best outcome for both parties. Mm-hmm. And we notice sometimes when we get involved in mediation and things like this, it's people box themselves into a corner where everybody's too frightened to sort of come forward and say, well, actually, this isn't the right place for me. And actually, what I would like to do is go and do this, but I'm stuck. Or they get caught up in the conflict of the conversation, or, you know, those sort of issues. Mm-hmm. So I think there's different ways of looking at it, but I think that's not a traditional occupational health model.
It's not. And it's, as you were talking there, I was thinking back to my corporate days. I mean, when I worked 24 years in corporates, they had their own in-house occupational health. And I'll be really honest, it was a tick box. They just repeated what the employee said. It was a tick box from a legal point of view. They brought no value. There was no commercial. There was no genuine impartiality. And that's what makes an external occupational health provider. You are commercially astute. You know, you are very aware and you're willing to put your professional opinion into there based on what you've heard, what you're allowed to discuss, and your experience and knowledge. And you are very, very different to internal HR, occupational health, from, you know, that I experienced in my corporate days. And that's why we really enjoy working with you, because you are very honest in your opinion. And, you know, for anyone who understands occupational health, an individual obviously gets a report from you. They get a time limit, which is, again, another innovation you have around. It doesn't sit with the employee for months on end waiting for them to approve it. You literally give them a time limit. And if they don't meet that time limit, like anything, they're given a time limit if we ask someone to sign a contract. And they can challenge the facts in there. But your professional opinion, you own it and you're not afraid to state it, which is why we enjoy working with you, because your opinion is based on knowledge, experience, and your professional knowledge, and it is your opinion. And you stand by that. You know, sometimes we find that opinions, certainly in my corporate days, and even sometimes from GPs, and I will come on to that in a moment, they're afraid to voice an opinion in case they get a complaint, whereas you will voice your professional opinion. And like anything, not everyone's going to like what they hear, but you will professionally stand by that, and you're insured to stand by that, the same as we are. We're insured to stand by what we do. And that's why we really enjoy working with you, because you're willing to give your true opinion.
Can I just make a point on that? This is really important, I think. And this is one of the failings of, if I'm being honest, of the occ-health sector. If I can sound a little bit controversial, because the main reason we moved into occupational health ourselves was frustrations with the quality of occupational health we received ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the thing that really used to drive me mad was you get a report that just kicked the can down the road with mm-hmm. no real opinion, no real judgment about what was happening or what was going to happen or what the next stages were. Now, there are cases, as we've worked on, sometimes you'll get really detailed reports mm-hmm. and sometimes less is more, and you'll get quite a short one. But it's not that the conversations are the same, but it's actually about what you can and what you're willing to, or you get consent to share. Now, there's nobody that we ever assess will be the employee, for example, will ever get a report which they don't know the contents of already. Mm-hmm. They might not like it, but part of it is being really honest and very direct with people from the outset. So I think the other point is it's around you've got to be straight with people. Mm-hmm. And that's often not the case.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when I look back at my history of requesting medical reports, I think sometimes as well, it's our understanding of actually what are we trying to seek as well, because quite common, I know certainly in our corporate days, we literally had a list of questions that we just picked from and stuck it in a letter and hoped something come back. But we never took the time like we do now to understand the situation and really understand what's in the best interest of the individual and the employer, because, you know, we're completely impartial, whereas historically we weren't always impartial, but there was an agenda. We don't always have an agenda now. But I am part of Daniel Barnett's HR Inner Circle. For those who don't know Daniel Barnett, he is one of the top employment barristers in the UK, who I highly respect, with his own podcast. And, you know, he supports employment solicitors, you know, worked with royal family and many celebrities. And he has a great video about managing absence, where he's very much podcast, a conversation type webinar. And one of the things he talked about, because again, in my corporate days, and even early career as a HR consultant, we would request medical reports from GPs. We never went to occupational health, we went to GPs. But we became very frustrated with GP reports that would take months to get. We'd have to chase. They wouldn't give any detail. It was very much closed answers to, in relation to the questions. Even though you would put in a copy of the job description, they never took the time to read it. They wouldn't give an opinion on whether an individual came under the Equality Act. And then you'd get this report that kicked the can down the road, and was also, there was never anything in there where they would challenge the individual or profess their full opinion. Now, I listened to Daniel Barnett's podcast on this, and they talked about that an occupational health report, in their opinion, as employment, very qualified employment barristers, trumps GP report. And the reason they talked about that is because a GP report will always have bias to not receiving a complaint about their opinion, because they're a GP and they don't have the time to read the job descriptions, they don't have time to do a quality report. When you think of where their time goes and what they do, that's not what they do. They think very differently. So not only do they take forever to get, they're not what we need. And actually, as someone who recently spoke twice on conferences for management and practice managers and GPs, I had some really detailed conversations with GPs just last week about medical reports. And even though we kind of say occupational health report trumps a GP report and always will in an employment tribunal because it's a professional opinion that's insured, it's non-biased, they don't know the person, they're not protecting themselves from complaint, it's a completely professional opinion. GPs, every single one of them said the same thing to me. I don't want to be doing reports. I don't have time. I don't make the money on it. Let's be honest here, from a commercial point of view, because they're also private businesses. But also, they're not workplace experts like occupational health are. And they don't get involved in employment law and the Equality Act. So they're never going to voice their opinion. So they've said, yes, one, we don't want to be doing them. We don't have time to do them. So crack on and send them to occupational health. We're good with that. So I always say to anyone I meet in the HR consultancy world, do not request a report from the GP. If a report is needed from the GP or a specialist, let occupational health do it for Absolutely. You, because they actually know what to ask. We don't. We don't know enough. Let them ask it. Let them refer and ask that additional information if they need it. And they were quite honest, which was, you know, and that's my opinion. I tell everyone, occupational health trumps GP report.
100%. But I think there's also another way. So we work very closely with GPs. We employ GPs. Our medical director is a very senior GP. And I think there's got to be really clear on what the role of a GP is. Mm-hmm. The GP's role is solely, their responsibility is solely to the individual patient. Mm-hmm. They have no responsibility to an employer. They have no responsibility to anyone else other than that patient. Now, one of the things I say, you're quite right, and it's amazing sometimes you'll get these reports provided by other people or, you know, from an employer or whatever. They'll say, well, the GP won't share the medical information with us, or they won't explain X, Y, and Z, or they won't give a view on employment. As you've highlighted, they're not qualified to do so.
No.
Their only job is to care for the individual. And many occupational health doctors are GPs and have GP practices. And actually, what you see is there's a bit of a split personality between these two roles, really, which I think the role of occupational health providers is to actually try and broker that role between understanding what the GP is doing and what's the best interest of the individual with what that really means for the workplace. Now, unless you understand that workplace, you're not going to be able to give an opinion. And what I've also seen is sometimes too many questions are asked of the GP. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking from occupational, but from employers. So people will say to us, well, I've written and I sent these 18 questions through to them. Now, actually, when you look at the questions, I think quite often people are asking the wrong things. Mm-hmm. They're asking inappropriate things. They're asking things that aren't relevant to the role that they're trying to assess. Mm-hmm. And you can immediately say, you can look at that and say, there's no way you're going to get a response on this. And in many ways, I understand that. I get that. When we contact GPs, because there's two sides of this, quite often we will write to a GP, say we've done an assessment, and particularly if it's a complex one, if we've got a concern. Quite often we're actually writing to champion the needs of the patient who isn't getting what they're needing. Mm-hmm. And we've seen this particularly around complex mental health needs, where people can't get the site, they're not being reviewed. But the point of occupational health for me is about that active brokerage piece that isn't what you're going to get from a GP practice, and you never will. Legally, you're absolutely right. So a GP's fit note can be overturned by an occupational health nurse, mm-hmm. right? So it's not about a status thing, which then can be overturned by a consultant. Mm-hmm. So actually, though, the gap between the three, if you know what you're doing, it's very rare when you actually then try and work, if you can work with a GP, it's very rare that you ever have to turn around and say, well, hang on a minute, we don't agree with this, we're going to overturn it. Mm-hmm. Quite often when you go through it with them, they'll say, oh, well, we see what you mean. Yeah, they can come back to work, they can do this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. The one that always true, red flags, and we've talked about this, mm-hmm. anything that mentioning stress at work or, you know, sort of overwork or any of these sort of things, that's your red flag where you need to bring your health in immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, because actually many of those things, the GP will not know what the situation is. So you've got a very sort of black and white statement almost saying you're the problem at work, mm-hmm. and it's the employers or the environment is wrong.
Yeah.
If you think how long somebody spends with the GP, mm-hmm. there's no way they're going to understand anything in the sort of 4 to 6 minutes that you get with them. So this is where I think a real trigger point should be, is around that those where fit notes and what's actually written on them.
And we work really well with that. I mean, we've had many a conversation around a fit note where both boxes have been ticked and we're like, they're either unfit or
yeah.
or can come back with adjustments, but the GP's actually not recommended anything. And again, that comes back to those 4 to 6 minutes and they are not workplace experts. So,
yeah.
you know, there is sometimes challenges around that. So we have a great relationship of working together and we certainly have some fun and some great conversations. What are the biggest challenges, do you think, at the moment facing workplaces and HR consultants?
Well, I think there's a number. I think you've got the economic drivers. We'll put them to one side because that's always going to be the issue for business.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest problem, and there's two sides, there's in-house HR, mm-hmm. which is a, you know, really difficult and undervalued role,
mm-hmm.
because anything that happens wrong in that company is going
HR.
To be down to HR.
HR at fault. They did
so
it.
So they did it.
They're responsible for it all.
Yeah, they're the ones who, you know, you haven't sorted salaries out, you haven't booked this, you haven't booked that. You really saw it in COVID. So we ended up actually, we worked very closely with a lot of HR in-house people, and we ended up providing a lot of support to them personally, mm-hmm. because of those pressures where everything coming from above and below. So I think it's unrecognised and it's undervalued. As you said, many of those people then do set up their own and move into HR consultants work. And I think, again, it's quite often hard for HR consultants to really explain what the value to the employers are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, primarily where people are using HR consultants, unless it's a specialist role, HR consultants are working with SMEs.
Mm-hmm.
who don't have either the resources, the knowledge, etc. So I think the biggest challenge that we see in some of the conversations, and I had one yesterday, where actually we were brought in to deal with a very specific problem, which I won't go into. But actually what was interesting was, very clear, was that the company were not listening to the consultant.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the consultant, what they were saying, was absolutely knew what she was doing and what the legal framework was. But there's sort of HR naive or naivety within companies where actually they're not quite sure what they're doing, but they're not necessarily working with and listening to the experience of the people who are professionals on this.
Mm-hmm.
And actually I had to sort of gently remind that actually, well, sort of you're not accepting what we're saying necessarily, and you've got an HR professional here who's telling you you're at legal risk on this,
mm-hmm.
but you're not listening.
And we do see that. I was talking about that with somebody else earlier where they bring us in but they don't always value what we say, and I quite often use this phrase, you can lead a horse to water.
Absolutely.
But you can't make it drink. And even though we work with many businesses, we do still have some that choose not to listen to the advice that we give, and there's nothing we can do about that. What do you think are the biggest challenges on the horizon for HR consultants and workplaces now?
Well, there's the obvious one with the new legislations coming in, trying to make sense of this, and then trying to educate employers around, you know, what this means and why they need to look at updating policies and things like that. I think that's going to always, there's always going to be a factor of that. I think the big issues we're seeing from a clinical perspective, which have really come to the fore, would be things like a much greater awareness of neurodiversity. There's an ongoing association and link with mental health. So mm-hmm. an understanding.
There is co-occurrence.
And we never see now just one issue.
No.
It's always combined issues. You're dealing with dual diagnosis in most cases, and they're getting more complex. I think we're also seeing a lot around generational issues, and there is a big sort of difference between the sort of presentations that you're getting from Gen Z mm-hmm. and from millennials or who we might be assessing. But I think when you look at the Gen Z debates, every generation basically thinks that they've had it harder than the next one. But there are very specific things that we're seeing from a clinical perspective. So there's a much greater willingness to associate, say, ability to deal with life, be it an argument with a boyfriend, girlfriend, a partner, or whatever it might be.
Day-to-day life. Day-to-day life
is immediately a mental health issue.
Yes. And we see that in the workplace where what we would deem in the older generation as a day-to-day challenge, the Gen Z, with some elements of millennium, we're starting to see as they're naming it as mental health. And there is some genuine people out there that are poorly, but we're also seeing that the coping mechanisms for day-to-day stresses is a lot less. We're certainly seeing that. And, you know, just touching on your point you talked about with neurodiversity, I know as an ADHD coach and working very closely with the ADHD Foundation, who have been a huge source of knowledge for me, that there is a lot of co-occurrence. Mental health and addictions is quite often a coping mechanism for neurodiversity. Yeah. So we're now starting to recognise and pitch all of those links. And this is why I talk a lot about HR professionals really getting educated now on neurodiversity. So what's next for Recovery for Life now then?
Well, more and more complex cases, I think, is the one thing. So we've been going 8 years. All of this has been done organically and by referral. So the next stage is we're going to have to pretend to be a real company and start looking at wider marketing and stuff like this, but also around how we scale the business. Mm-hmm. And I think the challenge for us is really understanding how we can scale quite particular specialisms and how that then can be sort of rolled out and developed with other people coming in. Mm-hmm. So it's actually very difficult because it's a real challenge from us from a clinical perspective when we're looking at for clinical staff, because it's not just having get the right people the right attitude, but it's actually about helping people getting at the right stage so that people aren't so set in the ways, which many people in occupational health are, unfortunately, that a different way of working is seen as an exciting prospect where you can actually make much more of an impact on individuals rather than doing the same thing you've always done for the past 20 years. So I think that will be the big challenge for us. But, I mean, it's very exciting times. You know, we're getting some great support through different groups. We've got a great chair in James Ramsbotham, who's the chair of Newcastle Building Society and former at the North East Chamber of Commerce. And, you know, with that and contacts and the support we're getting through people like the Entrepreneurs Forum, through the Chamber, Make UK, these sort of membership bodies, I think there's a very dynamic business environment which we work very well with. So we're very excited for the future. And, you know, it's, you know, we're still waiting for that day when a case hits the table and we look at it and go, we have no idea what to do with this one. And we haven't found one yet. But we're sort
I'm
of,
sure
the day it is, it'll be quite exciting when we go, hang on, what do we do about this one?
Don't put that challenge out to HR consultants, because they will absolutely
bring it on. We can have a good laugh on that one.
I'm sure with some of the cases we deal with, we will probably reach that point at some point for you. But it is a challenge, and I had that challenge when I decided to go territory license and bring people in to work under my brand. How do you grow whilst maintaining the standards, the quality, the service and the reputation? So I do understand
That's the big challenge, and
I just say very carefully, I don't bring anyone in. It's an application process, and they have to be right for our culture, our values, and they have to work in the way that we work as well. So thank you for coming on the podcast today, John. We've obviously talked about quite a lot today, and hopefully we've helped a few consultants out there understand why we work together, why they should come into consultancy, and why they should maybe consider working with us. What can the listeners do to find out a little bit more about Recovery for Life? Where can they go?
Right, well, we're a bit of a best-kept secret, so the best thing to do would be you can contact us directly on the website, www.recoveryforlife.co.uk. We'll give our details out as part of the webcast, and anybody's welcome to have my mobile number and call me directly. But a good starting point was, if people are interested in working with us, we'll send them some anonymised reports. And I think it's hard to communicate what the difference is until you see it. So anybody who's interested, if we can support, we're very happy to, so long as we're all aligned with the right values and, you know, the reason we're doing this. And just get in touch and we'll happily send you some stuff and some case studies and just see if we're the right people for you.
Brilliant. Thank you, John. Thanks for listening to the HR Business Blueprint podcast. For any information on what we've covered in this episode, head to the show notes. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. See you next time.